In this episode of Hot Hot Wears 2.5 Geeks, we will have the best of CES 2019. What's this crazy Intel AMD acquisition rumor? Yeah, make sure we say that. What were you duped by Facebook's creepy AI-driven 10-year challenge, dude or dudette? And a new NU audio thing from our friends at EVGA next. Hey, welcome back to another episode of Hot Hardware's 2.5 Geeks. I just had the podcast feeding back into my ear and I was hearing myself on a 3-second delay, and boy, that was confusing. But we'll try not to be completely confused in this show for you today, folks. But I have with me two gentlemen who can probably at least keep us on the straight and narrow somewhat. We have Marco Cepeda from Hot Hardware. How you doing, Marco?
I'm doing okay, but there's no chance of me keeping you on the straight and narrow.
So you're my partner in crime. That's good. That's good. Paul, are you gonna roll with us here today in this to Crazy Town?
I am. And thank you for referring to us as gentlemen. I feel like we've graduated since the last time I was on this podcast.
You know I'm using that term loosely. You know that. It's all relative, but yeah, so we're back fresh from the land of Las Vegas. We actually chimed in last week a little bit on this, but we've had chance to sort through our thoughts and sort of digest the absolute surreal visual and audio and, you know, multi-sensory overload that is Las Vegas. So lots to talk about today. Are you guys catching your breath after the crazy hectic week that we all try and deal with here at in the tech space?
I'm trying to fight off the plague. I'm on the edge of catching a cold, but I think I'm going to beat it. But other than that, yeah, I think we're good. Lots of stuff happening in the next 2 weeks, so make sure you keep coming by the site. Lots of stuff I can't talk about yet, but breathing.
There you go. Breathing's good. Breathing's good. Paul, are you breathing? Are you imbibing the atmosphere properly?
I am, and it seemed I wasn't at CES this year. I know you guys were. It seems like it was busier this time around, or at least a little more interesting than the last couple ones have been in the PC space anyway.
Yeah, I would agree with you. It seemed like there was a lot of new releases going on. I would offer that, and Marco, you probably have an opinion on this too. I would offer that I wasn't exactly wowed by all the new stuff. It's sort of iterative in spots, but then there was some genuine kind of holy crap sort of stuff too. But yeah, it was busy, man. It just seems like tech right now is on a growth trajectory. It's a great place to be, but everybody's getting more connected, more tech savvy too. Like, you know, the mainstream consumer, I think, I don't know what you guys think, but I think the mainstream consumer these days is more tech savvy, more knowledgeable, and dare I say, more geeky. Is that fair?
I think that's fair. And this particular CES, it's like Intel, AMD, NVIDIA, most of their announcements were PC-centric. Not all of them, but most of them. All of the game PC manufacturers came out with some really cool stuff. So yeah, although there wasn't like some huge, big whiz-bang surprise out of the show, it did seem more, you know, PC-focused than the last few.
Yeah. I think the PC platform in general has hit a popularity spike due to phenomenons like Fortnite and certainly esports in general. But yeah, cool stuff. And near and dear to our hearts. So makes for interesting coverage and testing. Marco, you've been whittling away your digits in the wee hours to test stuff, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Just a little.
Just a little.
Cool. So let's dive right in and talk about what we saw, what we feel, and in our heart of hearts was the best of CES. Now, this is going to change and vary depending on the tech enthusiast/analyst or journalist that you may talk to. depending on really what, you know, interests you in technology. And, you know, as we've discussed, there's a ton of stuff out there these days. Everything is getting, you know, more digitally capable. And so, for us, this is, you know, core of what we took away as the best of CES. And we round up usually on the order of top 10. We floated, I think, to 11 or 12 this year. But the best products, sights and sounds that we saw at CES as delivered by some of the top names. So let's step through them quickly sort of dissect each one and explain to the folks why we felt these were noteworthy and perhaps best of in terms of their innovation and design. Right on the top of the list, might as well start with the A's. Let's talk about Asus's cylindrical mini PC. The ProArt PA90 impresses with Core i9 and Quadro graphics. Look at that thing. It is, I'm not sure what I would liken it to, but, you know, a tall, overgrown smart speaker sort of shape with some pretty cool features to it. But yeah, 8th gen, Core i9 processor, I assume 6-core, and then a ton of technology on board, anything from NVMe solid state drive to NVIDIA's Quadro graphics for obviously the content creation professional, designer, what have you. Thoughts on this, guys? Marco, I don't know if you got a chance to check this out. It has a pretty cool convertible sort of feature to it as well.
Yeah, so I actually really dug this machine. So it's latest 9th gen, not 8th gen process. Core i9-9900K is an option in here. And Quadro P2000 or 4000. I think what strikes me about this machine is it's basically better than the Mac Pro. I know the Mac Pro is getting up there, getting a little long in the tooth, but it's a better Mac Pro for a lower price with modern hardware with a really attractive design. And even though it's got that funky cylindrical form factor, as you mentioned, it does have this cool feature where if it is thermally challenged, the lid will automatically open to allow for better airflow. So I think it's a really beautiful machine for somebody who, like you mentioned, a content creation professional who's also, you know, conscious of what they're putting around their desk. If they want something, you know, eye-catching and small form factor, I think it's a nice machine.
Yeah, the office environment is key, and it's actually strapped pretty good in terms of, you know, accommodating the media professional. Dual Thunderbolt 3 ports, 4 USB 3.1 Gen 2 ports, 4 DisplayPort 1.4 connections, and 802.11ac integrated AC Wi-Fi. Looks a little, you know, it's funny though, when folks see this and it's a you love it or hate it kind of thing. I think it was a little too much of a hat tip to, not a hat tip, but a riff on perhaps the cylindrical shape of the Mac Pro that Apple came out with that people were calling trash can and all that good stuff. It's like trash can without a hole. So, but we've seen this shape before, right? We've seen this shape before where that cylindrical shape thermally works. It actually does. Heat rises. So, you know, you put the, you know, the cool stuff at the bottom, the hotter components as you get towards the top so that thermally you're not saturating components on the way by. And then it exhausts out the top. Heat rises. It works. Paul, do you buy it? Do you think it's credible?
It's an interesting design in terms of that top section that automatically rises if it gets. I did see some mixed reactions from readers on that. I mean, one of the knocks was, you know, if it has to do that, why not design it to where it stays open or where it wouldn't need to do that? I don't know if that's because Asus was worried about too much dust getting in or what have you, but I think it's a clever design. It's I like it. I wouldn't be opposed if I needed something like this to owning one.
Yeah. And then it's got Quadro P4000 up to Quadro P4000 graphics. Marco, you're familiar with the Quadro cards. I know that's your bailiwick. What level is that sort of mid-range? I know it's previous generation, certainly not Turing, but it's mid-range Pro graphics for NVIDIA, right?
Yeah. So the P4000 is funny. it's so technically it's a notch behind the P5000 and P6000 in the Pascal family, but the P4000 actually has more memory bandwidth than the 5000. So in some situations where memory bandwidth is the, you know, the performance limiting factor, it's actually faster than a P5000. Like if you look at Luxmark performance, the 4000 is faster than the 5000 in some of the tests. So yeah, it's a fairly powerful pro graphics solution, just not the craziest high end.
Yeah. Yeah. And the top pops at 80 C. So when the CPU temperature gets near that thermal threshold, the top will pop open and allow for additional venting. Automatically extends, allowing 38% more airflow into the chassis for optimized thermal efficiency. So claims ASUS. We'll have to get one in to test, right? So that was the ASUS ProArt. Let me make sure I get this right. ProArt PA90. Gosh. Okay. Let's move on to something from the good folks at Dell, and they actually came out with a couple of somethings. The Dell XPS 13 9380 2019 preview. We actually have this in process right now. We gave it a best of CES. It has historically earned HotHardware.com Editor's Choice Awards for its wonderfully beautiful and well-architected industrial design chops, but also it's really solid for a thin and light machine like this, super thin and light machine, Infinity Edge bezels, all that good stuff. It's really solid thermal solution that actually keeps the processor on board pretty chill, even under extended use, limiting thermal saturation. Paul, you're testing this now, so I'm going to dish to you first on this one. What do you think so far of this, the frost white, by the way, version, new silver lid with that spun white glass palm rest and keycap area? Looking pretty slick, is it?
Yeah, I have a house, and it is a sweet-looking machine. Hopefully that'll be conveyed in the pitch. You know, it's always the tough part. It is a nice-looking machine. And, you know, Dell, we've given their XPS 13 Editor's Choice in the past, and what's interesting is each time they come out with the new one, it's not in big changes that they make to the overall laptop. It's little design changes that add up to, like I said, what we give an Editor's Choice. And for this first round, for this newest one, they upgraded the bar, but they also moved the webcam from the bottom to the top, so you don't have that nose cam, as it's become called, where it's looking up and you're showing everybody your nose hair when you're on a conference call. So that's probably the biggest improvement one besides the performance. We gave a preview of the performance with some of the benchmarks, and it was either at the top of the chart or near the top of the chart, and everything we've thrown at it so far. So it's another iteration of the XPS 13 with some small changes to what we feel so far is the best XPS 13 yet, which is saying a lot because of how much we've liked their previous versions.
Yeah. Marco, are you guys getting, Paul, you may have had a little bit of drop going on there. Were you getting some choppiness, or was that my end? Did I have the gremlins, or was it Paul?
I had weird audio from Paul as well. It was clipping.
Okay. All right. Uh-oh. Well, sorry about that, folks. Paulie, if you might try closing a couple of windows and limiting on bandwidth consumption, because old grandma internet ain't happy with you right now, maybe. So the XPS 13 new for 2019. And one of the things you were right about, certainly the major gripe folks had with the platform was the nose cam. And they did that. They achieved, you know, correcting the nose cam issue and putting it back up on the top bezel, where obviously line of sight, it's much better lined up with your face up there. Before, they didn't have enough material area in the top bezel to integrate the camera up there. So they had to keep it down on the bottom bezel, where obviously they had to also maintain that area to lift the display up off the keyboard. So they went to this from what was a 7 millimeter high camera array to a 2.25 millimeter high camera array. So it's like tiny, tiny thin camera array. And a lot of folks think, you know, they put these tiny cameras in the bezels of smartphones. Why can't they throw that in a laptop? And I would just offer that it's different. It's not the same technology. There's the new camera array right there. Marco, are you familiar with the difference between a smartphone camera? And we're getting, you know, major photography capabilities out of smartphones in a seemingly very thin camera array in a very tiny bezel. Why can't the PC guys do that? Or am I asking too many questions?
I think it's because the PC guys were trying to conform to a Windows Hello and make sure their cameras were Windows Hello capable. And that required the infrared transmitters and certain camera types, which weren't really available in those smaller, you know, super slim form factors. So I haven't got my hands on that new one. I think that new one is that Windows Hello capable? Do you know if that machine is Windows Hello compatible?
I believe so. Yeah, I believe it is.
So yeah, they were probably just waiting on that.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you messed with the Windows Hello side of it, or has it asked you for that?
I'll have to double check. I thought that it wasn't. I know it has a fingerprint reader, but I think it's not Windows Hello, but I will double check that.
In the camera. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So yeah, no, it's a beautiful machine. You know, and it continues to impress. We are stepping through. I know, Paul, you're still stepping through testing for things like battery life. But when you look at the numbers, and John, I don't know if you can throw the preview back up and maybe scroll down to the graphs. Obviously, this thing has the new Whiskey Lake Intel architecture on board now. And it is grabbing all the first score, top score marks, whether you look at Cinebench, Geekbench, or more real world testing with FutureMark, PC Mark 10, where it actually steps through trace-based application testing. It has, you know, seriously fast NVMe solid state drive on board. It is a great machine, and we're looking forward to giving it the full deep dive. They haven't really tweaked in terms of the design aesthetic much, but I don't know what else you can do. The machine's just kind of beautiful as it is. Other than the nose cam, Marco, this is your baby. I know you have a rose gold and white as your daily driver. Would you ask for anything else other than a platform refresh, which is obviously, you know, there?
It seems like Dell has finally nailed the design. Like, virtually everyone across the web called the XPS 13 almost perfect and gave it numerous awards. The only caveat was that camera position. So if the new one has the battery life to match that performance and the camera position has been fixed, very little to complain about.
Yeah. Yeah. Good machine for sure. Again, award-winning for us. And we expect this one at first glance, as long as Paul deems it so, could in fact enjoy the same success in our overall assessment. So we'll have to see. But good stuff. I just dropped something in the chat to Ashen One. Was looking for a little bit more information on that Asus PC. So that's in there. And let's move on to some bigger iron stuff. We have it sort of scattershot in here. We go from desktops to laptops to all kinds of stuff. But let's talk about Main Gear and Digital Storm deliver powerful customized gaming PCs at CES 2019. And so that's the article. If you scroll down, John, the bottom PC, we've seen Main Gear's F131 right there, which is absolutely gorgeous, stunning. We gave it a best of CES last year. Not much has changed with that, except for some newer features. That's the Main Gear Rush Omega there. That's a beautiful machine as well. But the best of CES award we gave to this little guy, the Digital Storm Spark. I don't know if you can scroll down to that. Little guy on the bottom standing next to the tiny little flower vase. It is ridiculously small. And Marco took a picture with this thing on his smartphone, his Pixel 3, that looked like it should have been in Better Homes and Gardens. It was like, here's your PC, your gaming PC sitting next to this cute little flower pot and a nice little couch in the background. And yeah, so the Digital Storm Spark, Marco, why don't you dive into this thing? Because it's crazy. It's got hardline liquid tubing and modular graphics. And oh my goodness, a lot going on in that little fella.
that thing is nuts. So if the CES spooge was removed from that table and that water bottle was gone, that is a photo worthy of a magazine, but whatever. So this
CES spooge.
Wow. So this little machine is actually really cool. You might think it's just a mini ITX Mobo crammed into, you know, a small rectangular case, but it's not. So that motherboard is actually a custom form factor that's smaller than mini ITX. The GPU that's in there, this particular one was a GTX 1080, but it uses MXM modules, and we got confirmation that up to an RTX 2080 is going to go in there. You have hardline liquid cooling and this like super tiny form factor. This thing, like if you look at the vase behind it, it's barely bigger than the vase. So super powerful PC with really strong graphics capabilities in a really tiny, unassuming, good-looking enclosure. So this particular model is not quite retail ready, but it's the, you know, the foundation for what's to come from Digital Storm. And I thought it was a really cool, tiny little machine.
Yeah. Yeah. Power supply is external, right?
I don't think so. Isn't it right at the top there?
I thought that was the water pump and radiator and fan. Yeah. I thought that was the reservoir.
So I don't remember specifically, but you're probably right. Cause it does say DC cool, on there. So it's entirely possible. Yeah. I don't remember specifically, though. I don't want to say the wrong thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, that it's a crazy machine, and it's amazing when you can get into the form factor. Interesting about the modular graphics, and something we'll get back to shortly. There's some happy people over there, by the way. I hear them. I hear those.
Sorry, so Sophie's watching a movie and she's laughing.
That's awesome. No, child laughter. It's, I mean, if that's our worst fate, we're doing all right. So yeah, it was interesting about the modular graphics on this thing. So they said MXM module. There was a 1080 in there now, 2080 coming. We heard from the folks at Dell when they were going through there, and we'll talk about this, the Area 51M, amazing laptop. We'll talk about that shortly. That the MXM was going away, and we've also heard, you know, NVIDIA, I mean, what we've learned over the past is NVIDIA hasn't been supporting that platform much. Somehow Digital Storm is bringing MXM in. Do we know anything more about that?
I asked NVIDIA, so I do. It's not that NVIDIA is not supporting MXM. It's that to hit the newest, slimmest, lightest weight form factors, most of the notebook ODMs want to go ahead and solder the GPU down on the motherboard, the GPU memory, so that they can fit their form factors and cooling solutions. But that doesn't mean that the newer chips don't work on MXM. It's just not quite as widely used. So for form factors like this, the newer chips, you know, will be available on MXM modules.
Gotcha. Cool. Cool machine, amazing machine. And just wild to see what you can square. I don't know. How big is this thing again? What's the size, the dimensions? Let me see if I can get this.
I do not have that committed to memory, but it's something like 4 inches wide and 12 inches tall, something like that.
Yeah, it's roughly that, and it's just crazy what you can get in that thing. And hardline liquid cooling, the whole deal. Good stuff from the folks at Digital Storm. All right, so let's move on to the next one. Best of CES again. HP's gargantuan Omen Imperium 65. 144 hertz, no less, G-Sync panel. It's HDR as well. And Marco, you gamed on this thing and you ripped it up with what was the title you were playing? Was it Battlefield 5?
Battlefield 5. I wouldn't say I ripped it up.
At first, you were like,
meandered around is probably the better.
At first, you were shooting at trees and owls and stuff, but eventually, you started getting some bad guy kills in. So, yeah, the HP Omen X Imperium 65 4K HDR G-Sync TV, really, but gaming monitor as well, onboard NVIDIA Shield. For streaming, what else do you need in the living room? Nothing, right?
I want to say something naughty, but I won't. In terms of gaming, that thing, no, it's awesome. It's, if you were to kind of write down all of the specs that an insane gamer would want on a large format display, it kind of ticks all the boxes. Fast refresh rate, built-in Shield, G-Sync, HDR, you know, fast response time, 4K resolution. It's just a killer display.
Yeah, 1,000 nits brightness. So we were in this the digital experience showroom, and you know, that thing's a spectacle with all kinds of bright lights and noises and flashes going on around you. And so 1,000 nits brightness, HDR10 compliant, and the sound system underneath the display, this huge sound bar they had was thumping. I think it's like 120 watts. I have to look up the specs. It's over 100. I think it's 120 watts.
Yeah, that it's 120 watts, four speakers, four passive radiators. So yeah.
Yeah, that thing was thumping ridiculously loud too. It sounded great. Paul, is this the thing for your man cave, dude?
Oh yeah, I think anyone would want one of these in there. That's yeah.
Man, woman,
I have cave. A question yeah. for you guys though. You guys saw this in person. How did it compare to what you've seen with some of the OLED panels that might have been on display?
I can give an opinion here, and I'll ask Marco to jump in too. But I've seen lately some of the brighter HDR10 compatible displays are competing with OLED now. Viewing angles on this thing were awesome. You get off to the side and. I don't know what technology it is. Marco, do you know IPS or otherwise? But I would say what we're seeing with HDR super bright displays, you know, north of 500 nits, and this is 1,000 nits, they start to compete with OLED. What are your thoughts, Marco? And do we know what technology the panel is made out of?
Yeah, it's an LED, multi-zone LED backlit IPS LCD. And IPS. Yeah, okay. So I agree with Dave. It's damn good. If you were to go side by side with some of the, so this, it's a $5,000 panel, right? So if you were to put this side by side with a $5,000 high end OLED, the OLEDs have the deeper blacks. Like OLED to me, when you see like a perfect image on an OLED display, it's almost like looking through a window. It's just the blacks are deeper black. It's just a more organic looking display to me. It looks more realistic and it is nicer. That's not to say this thing isn't super nice though. You know, in a bubble, this thing kicks major ass side by side with a $5,000 OLED. Strictly in terms of quality, I'd probably choose the OLED, but this is definitely a better panel in terms of gaming and motion and speed, things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool stuff. It's pricey, no question about it. We don't have official pricing from HP on it yet, but that was one of the things we walked into the room and we were like, whoa. You know, I mean, there's few moments. I mean, you know, we have to say, Marco, there's few moments where we walk into a room and we go, holy crap. That was kind of a holy crap, right?
So I'm not going to say I'm a germaphobe. But my big ass kneeled down on the floor to play a game on that thing. I kneeled down on a floor in Vegas. You might as well inject me with the plague.
It's true. It's true. And he is a germaphobe too. good stuff. All right, let's move on to a couple of laptops, and we'll have to pick up our cadence here because we're just eating up time. But the stuff is just. I mean, we did see some cool stuff this year. Let's talk about Lenovo, and they unleashed their thinner and lighter ThinkPad X1 Carbon and ThinkPad X1 Yoga with 8th Gen Core on board. Again, Whiskey Lake refresh here. The ThinkPad X1 Carbon historically has been my personal daily driver. Mind you, I do not need a notebook that games. I need a notebook that can get work done and crunch video. I do a lot of media editing on the road, and this is my has been historically my platform of choice. I love the Lenovo keyboards. Lenovo does a really good job of making shaped keycaps with great tactility. And that whole X1 Carbon platform has always been a favorite of mine. So refreshed, thinner and lighter. I want to say it's like a couple tenths of a pound lighter. It's like 2.4 pounds. And it's also been retooled with a little bit of a design signature on the lid now that's in keeping with the namesake. So X1 Carbon has always been a branding for the materials used, which is hybrid carbon fiber, ABS plastic construction around, you know, and a matte finish around the whole device. The top now has a hatched surface to it that gives it a carbon fiber look as well. Still the same feel, still a soft touch. It also minimizes fingerprints significantly better than the previous gen machine from what I could tell. Marco, am I missing other changes here? There's a couple other small tweaks, but the machine's really been optimized. Still on that super thin platform, 14-inch, and really a 13-inch platform, 14-inch display, HDR display as well.
Yeah, no, you hit most of it. It had the new texture on the lid, had the smaller bezels on the display, slightly lighter, I think 2.4 pounds versus 2.69 pounds or something like that for the previous gen. The only thing that was not really so great was the removal of the micro SD card slot, but it did have the LTE slot. So it did have a SIM slot in there if you want that LTE connectivity. So yeah, just an upgrade almost all around.
Yeah, the other thing we need to actually give more time to. We were in a suite. It was kind of noisy in spots, and they upgraded the sound system as well. So there's top firing drivers now, Dolby Atmos sound system on board. And Dolby Atmos, you know, if Dolby puts their signature on it, has to meet a certain audio fidelity. And one of the criticisms of this laptop historically, though, again, I'm popping in buds and editing video in my earbuds, but one of the critiques of this thing historically was, you know, audio solution was super thin and tinny even for an ultrabook, and they claim to have addressed that. I am annoyed as heck on the removal of the micro SD card slot, even, you know, that, you know, mini SD card slot. But what are you going to do? I guess, you know, maybe I'm in the minority. I just like being able to pull that sucker out of my camera and throw it in the laptop. Paul, are you a fan of the ThinkPad X1 Carbon or any of these type of machines?
You know, when we get them in for review, sometimes I'll take a look at them. It's not my daily driver like it is for you. I still like the big old bulky gaming laptops. But I do like, when I do spend time with them, I do like them, especially the keyboard, depending on the model. And the X1 Carbon has traditionally been very good there. Do you use the nub, though, on the ThinkPad?
I don't. I never do. It's really just a keyboard thing for me. I fly on those keyboards like no other. I'm not a big chiclet guy. There's something about the shaped keycap that just works for me with Lenovo. Maybe it's just that I'm comfortable on the machine after so many years of using it. But yeah, no nub. Not even remotely interested in that nub.
I like that they keep it there just for the old school look. I just wondered if anybody actually uses it. Since you had one as a daily driver, I figured you would let us know.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's a feature that folks that were you know, big on the platform, they're dyed in the wool, you know, track point. It's really not the nub, track point users. Right. And, you know, some folks can't live without that thing, but I've always been like, no, not for me. So anyways, yeah, the ThinkPad X1 Carbon, Lenovo's got some really good stuff in the works. We were impressed as always with their suite. They had some really cool stuff in terms of, this hybrid tablet smart speaker setup where you dock a tablet into a Harman Kardon smart speaker that has onboard Alexa assistant, really great sound. And then, yeah, that thing detaches and it's a smart tablet too, Android tablet. So really kind of cool. All kinds of stuff from Lenovo these days. And it was always good to see those folks. Let's stay on the subject of laptops, and one that wasn't, hooked up in the show notes, but absolutely should have because it was a show stealer. John, I'm going to drop this into the chat for you right now. And please put this up when you get a minute. Inside Alienware's Area 51M killer gaming laptop. Paul, this is all you, buddy. With modular GeForce RTX graphics. This thing kind of blew my mind, took me by surprise. I actually saw it in December in New York, met with the folks at Dell in a pre-CES meeting in Manhattan. There it is right there, the Alienware Area 51M. And Dell Alienware's VP and GM of the XPS and Alienware product lines, Frank Azor, took me through a walk around of the machine, its internals, its exterior on video. And you should check. I'll drop the link as soon as I can find it into the chat. But this machine has been totally redesigned. So if you're familiar with Alienware's 17 and 15 inch platforms, this is a complete design departure. It is the new Alienware Legend industrial design, and it is absolutely a impressive machine just from, you know, sheer look and feel. They're now going with, you know, flat matte finishes. In this case, they've got a really nice, I want to call it frost white again, although I know they don't call it that, but it's an off-white that's has a silvery component to it almost, flat. RGB keyboard, all that good stuff. Super thin bezel display for a 17-inch display, laptop display. It is a 1080p display, but they have high refresh up to 144 hertz. But the real kicker, other than this thing's wild cooling solution that sticks out the back now and the rounded corners and the lighting that trims it, it's really just, it's decked out. It's a super cool looking machine. the major feature of this machine is that is completely modular. So just like a desktop, it is almost completely modular. There's the guts of it right there. You have a socketable CPU, 9th gen Core i9-9900K available in that thing. Socketable 8-core CPU, up to 64 gigs of RAM, four SODIMM slots, modular, you know, Wi-Fi radio, all that good stuff, M2, NVMe SSD, modular, everything literally in the machine that you would upgrade in a desktop is now upgradable in this laptop. And then that piece of plastic that you saw up on the right, it trims the bottom. So when you pull the lid off the back, there's this trim plate around all the major sections of the machine that are upgradable. And it gives you instructions, you know, here's your M2 slot. Here's your, you know, this is, you know, use this tool. Here's the CPU socket. It's designed to accommodate user serviceability. So really impressed with that. And they even have modular graphics. So Dell went and designed, they didn't go MXM. They went and designed their own custom graphics module. RTX 2080 is available, or up to an RTX 2080. But let's say you configured a 2060, for example, in your initial machine that you bought. Later on down the road, you could upgrade to the next generation GPU or a 2070 or a 2080. Dell's saying they're going to support this. You can buy other components on the market. You don't have to buy from Dell, whether it be CPU or RAM. They suggest you buy from Dell because Dell will validate, you know, the components, but you don't have to. So impressive stuff. And, you know, again, sort of came out of nowhere. Alienware Area 51 is typically a desktop platform. Area 51M is now the notebook. So Marco, or let's go with Paul, because this is kind of the apple of his eye, these kind of machines. What do you think about this bad boy, Paul?
Yes, definitely an interesting concept. It's something that, you know, didn't catch on way back in the day when you had the white books, but is something I think people have been interested in. The key to me is going to be a little bit longer term support. Like you said, you can drop in some next gen parts. As long as that holds true, I think it goes beyond just an interesting concept and actually has some utility for enthusiasts who are willing, you know, to pay for something like this. It's obviously not for the mainstream buyer, but for enthusiasts who are interested in something like this, as long as Dell can keep supporting it, and as well as its partners like NVIDIA, I think they have something pretty neat on their hands.
Yeah, not cheap, no question about it. Starts at around, I want to say, close to $2,000, even for an entry-level machine. I want to say it was 1900 and change or something like that. Marco, any thoughts on this thing? Kind of crazy, right?
Yeah, you know, it's the kind of machine that I hope it sells, because the amount of effort that went into designing it should be applauded, whether you like this kind of stuff or not. Like, it's bold and it's brave for Dell and Dell's Alienware division to do stuff like this. Yeah. I actually think it looks really cool. I think that's a good looking machine, and to have that kind of horsepower in that form factor, pretty awesome. You know, if you're a gamer on the go and you want no compromises, you know, in a mobile gaming platform, you might have to pony up for it, but that thing's killer.
Yeah.
Even though it's expensive too, that's really where this type of concept works best, I think. Because let's say you're plunking down $2,500 or even $3,000 on a killer laptop. The last thing you want to do is have it feel slow in a couple of years and then be looking at spending another $2,500, $3,000 on a laptop. Whereas on something like this, maybe you could upgrade it to where it's fast again for significantly less. I don't know how much the upgrades would cost, but I would assume less than the whole system itself.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's been a couple of comments in the chat or questions in the chat is, you know, could we see AMD come into this thing? And I think it's hard to say. I don't see why not. But I don't know if Dell, it's hard for a manufacturer to commit to two major platforms on a device like this. I'd be surprised, but anything's possible. And certainly AMD's, you know, performance these days would merit that, right? I don't know what you think about that, Marco, but yeah.
I mean, it would have to be completely redesigned for AMD. So I'm not sure. I mean, if this one sells and there's demand for AMD, it's possible, but I wouldn't expect it.
And then hot rumors, Marcelo's asking about Navi. We veer off course a little bit. Navi, Red Gaming Tech, should be launching in June and products sold in July. Do you guys have you heard about it? If we couldn't tell you.
But yeah, like nothing to officially say. From the last rumors I heard was Navi's later than that. But Navi's also the first gen is going to be, if everything that we've heard is true, like again, speculating, the first cards based on Navi are sort of going to be the mainstream replacements, you know, something to replace the RX 580 and 590 class cards. With Radeon 7 coming and 7-nanometer Vega hitting consumer, which the previous rumor was that wasn't going to happen. And lo and behold, it did happen at CES, or at least it was announced. So tough to say. I think AMD can really, they're feeling kind of bold right now. They're feeling emboldened because they're having some success. So who knows? It's entirely possible. 7-nanometer Vega gets beefed up. Maybe Navi comes early. I can't really say for sure.
Marcelo says, Lisa said about the A51 in the stage guys, meaning I think Lisa Sue from AMD may have mentioned something about the Area 51. Maybe that was the desktop, though. I'm not sure about this notebook. Area 51M is the notebook, mobile. So, yeah, maybe we missed that. But, okay, well, let's move on and skip down a list a little bit and talk about a new GPU, Marco, that you have stepped through in great detail. We also gave it a best of CES because we felt the product merited not only an editor's choice from us, but, you know, it was notable. It was timed with CES, and it was really an impressive new device from the folks at NVIDIA, the GeForce RTX 2060. You did a review on that and stepped through the ins and outs of all the performance numbers. What are your thoughts on the new RTX 2060 from NVIDIA?
Oh, I think it's a great addition to their lineup. So full review has been up for a while. I actually have an EVGA GeForce RTX 2060 XC, the little short stubby guy. That review, I'm hoping to have it up tomorrow or the next day. That's a really cool card, by the way. But the RTX 2060, I think it's a great addition from NVIDIA. So you push Turing down to that $350 price point with performance that it's basically in line with a 1070 Ti. It trades with a 1080, clearly better than a 1060 or 1070. So yeah, this is a nice addition to the lineup at a price that's it's technically mainstream. I hesitate. It's at the upper end of what I'd call mainstream. But it's not a prohibitive cost of entry for somebody that wants RTX technology and NVIDIA's latest GPU architecture.
Yeah, when you talk about a $350 graphics card, you hit a swath of user that is decidedly more mainstream. Granted, you know, it'd be great if, you know, we had a $150, $200 graphics card that could support ray tracing. But obviously, this is a big honking chip. This is a cut of Turing that obviously takes a certain silicon real estate area and all the power support that goes with it. So it's kind of hard to expect that NVIDIA would be able to push that down to the low end. But 350, I don't know, Paul, what are your thoughts? Is 350 a mainstream price point that most folks can pony up to, or is that still asking too much?
I think it's still on the high side. I mean, it's obviously more affordable than the 2070, 2080, 2080 Ti. It's still a tough ask, but if somebody's wanting to be an early adopter of ray tracing and, you know, DLSS, then it is nice to see that they've come out with something that is more affordable. I don't want to come out and say it's affordable, but it's more affordable in quite a bit than the higher end cards.
Yeah. When you talk about the higher end cards, it's starting at what, $799 for a 2080, right? Is that it? Is that am I right with that, Marco?
Yeah.
these days. So yeah, that's you know, and 2080 Ti is a $1,200 card. I mean, and it's out of whack for a lot of folks. You can't justify that when, you know, frankly, you know, you can have the rest of your system costs as much, if not, you know, maybe less. So this, I think it does get it down. Go ahead.
I want to say, too, I think the model numbers throw people off, too, when they look at the price, because you look and you say $350 for a 2060, and then you start thinking of what the 1060 sold for. But like you guys were saying, the performance is more comparable to the 1070. So I think you have to look at the performance more in line with what it is and kind of separate what the model number says too. I'm not saying that everyone should go out and buy, you know, an RTX card, but I mean, in terms of evaluating it, the model numbers I think are throwing things off a little bit.
Yeah. So that's a good point. Marco, you stepped through the benchmarks in great detail. 1070 Ti level performance with the 2060, correct?
Closer to 1080. It kind of trades victories with 1080, though overall the 1080 is faster. I didn't have 1070 Ti in the graphs, but it's kind of right in line with 1070 Ti, though, like it's cheaper. I mean, when that article was published, it was cheaper than all those cards. I'm sure there's going to be some price rejiggering going on now because of it. But yeah, you know, it was $50 higher introductory price than a 1060, which, you know, to what Paul was saying, the model numbering and naming scheme probably stings to some people to see it's $50 more than a 1060. But the GPU is literally more than double the number of transistors, much bigger chip, and the performance is, you know, in a class that's a notch higher.
Yeah, if you look at the thing, I'm going to drop it into the chat here. Just pulled up Tomb Raider, you know, whatever. It's a popular title. 1440p performance is like one frame per second behind a 1080. So that's solid, you know, standard rasterization performance, not mixed, you know, with ray tracing or DLSS or any of the extra bells and whistles you get. That's really strong standard rasterized performance. And you get the future proofing of being able to support ray tracing. You've only got, you know, a title or two out there these days, and DLSS. It's a value, right?
Yeah, you know, it is.
Why would you buy a 1080 today is my point.
I wouldn't. And the other thing I should mention, so there's definitely some discussion going on behind the scenes too, because this EVGA card that I'm pushing to get the review done, it's not their highest end card, but it is factory overclocked. So the stock card from NVIDIA, the boost clock is 1680 megahertz. The EVGA RTX 2060 XC that I'm looking at is a smaller form factor, but its boost clock is 1755. Its original introductory price, I was told to nix that, and that it's only going to be $10 more, so it's going to be $359. So, and that boost to the boost frequency, in addition to the beefy cooler on this thing, it's really right there with the 1080 for $359. So it's hard to complain. You know, it's nice.
No, it's a great, I think, you know, a great offering from NVIDIA. And as Craig points to in the chat, that the $300 to $500 MSRP price range has been sort of thin on choices. And this thing really strikes an approachable, achievable price point for the mainstream consumer that, you know, with these high-end features and the performance isn't always hit. I'm trying to find now the next one that we should talk about real quick, and then we should move on and get out of the CES mode here. But I wanted to talk about Samsung's monitors at CES, specifically, Marco, the CG9 that we saw, which is a 49-inch. And if we scroll down a little bit, I don't think that's it, though. CRG9, 49-inch gaming monitor with dual QHD resolution. That thing was beast. I'm going to go look it up right now. What did you think about that thing, Marco?
Oh, that thing's hot sex, man. So basically, it's like having two 27-inch 1440p monitors side by side, but with, you know, FreeSync 2 HDR support, fast response time. I think it was 100 or 120 hertz refresh rate. It ticks all the right boxes. I personally don't like that crazy wide form factor. I have a 32-inch display in front of me, and I know I'm going to get beat up for this. It's too big. Like, I rarely look at the stuff in my
periphery. You're going to get beat up for it. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't care. So, but, you know, if you dig that wide form factor, you know, if you're working with big spreadsheets and you love to game and have that super wide point of view, just killer display.
Yeah, yeah. John, I just dropped it into the chat. If you can pull that up, there's a better picture of the Samsung CRG9 towards the bottom there. Yeah, 120 hertz, 49-inch. What I was psyched about, resolution is 5120 by 1440. There it is right there. 5120 by 1440 resolution. One of the things that's sort of driven me nuts with some of these larger 35-inch even displays is that we've been stuck with 1080p resolution. Sure, you get this nice, you know, 3 or 4K, you know, width, but height is 1080p, and or excuse me, yeah. Did I have that backwards? Anyways, that we're stuck at 1080p, and now finally we're getting, obviously, in a 50-inch panel, 1080p would have been ridiculous. 1440p here with 120 hertz refresh rate. Paul, you jonesing for that?
Well, like Marco, it's a little wide for what I prefer, but I'll tell you what, I'll put this out there. If Samsung goes with the marketing strategy that this is hot sex, I will buy one.
Samsung, you can send us a royalty check later for the marketing on that.
Balls courtesy in your court, of Marco.
You're welcome, everybody.
Hot sex display. Have a nice day. Yeah, that's all that needs to be said. All right, let's move on. Get out of the CES mode. Talk about something that Marco reviewed recently. This is the EVGA new audio sound card, which, you know, frankly, when I first saw this go up, or when I thought, you know, saw this product come in, I should say, and we saw it at CES, I was thinking, a sound card? You know, everybody's so focused these days on integrated graphics, integrated audio on the motherboard, that sound cards really don't get a whole lot of love these days. But EVGA is bringing the love back. And Marco, I'm not sure we want to get into the hot sex thing again, but was this a whole lot of audio love?
Oh, this is a whole lot of eargasm. No, I had to. You set it up.
Jesus, sorry.
You set it up. I had to. You can't do that. I'm gonna knock it down every time. So yeah, we saw the card at CES for the first time. We should sort of mention that EVGA has been developing this for a long time. They actually had the guys from what's the company they developed it with? Let me just look at that. Audio Note. They co-developed this with Audio Note out of the UK. And the last couple of years, EVGA had an external USB audio solution in their suite that was sort of proof of concept type of thing. But that USB solution has since morphed into this card. It's basically, a high-end hi-fi USB audio solution crammed onto a PCI Express X1 card. The DSP at the core, the XMOS X-Core 200 that's on this card is bridged to PCI Express. And basically what you have is this high-end DSP linked to top-notch, even like the resistors, top-notch caps, top-notch resistors, top-end op amps. And all of the circuitry is sort of isolated. You have separate ground planes for the digital and analog circuits, and the power circuits are shielded. So if you took all of the things that an audiophile would want in a sound card, that's what EVGA tried to do here. The goal with this card, in our discussions with EVGA and the guys from Audio Note, are, you know, we want to play back the highest quality source material the way it was recorded, without, you know, molesting it with crazy filters. I mean, there has to be some filtering going on, but, you know, some sound cards, it's all about adding reverb and doing crazy stuff. That's not what the new audio is about. And, you know, I had to turn and burn this. We just got back from CES a few days ago. I popped it in when we got home. I've been gaming on it, been watching movies. I've been playing various audio files. And, you know, if you switch back and forth, even with a relatively high-end integrated audio solution, you can notice the difference. It's a really crisp, clean sounding card. No weirdness. The software is early. Now, I say that not because it feels immature. I say it because it's super Spartan. You know, you install the drive. It's a 6.4 meg driver download, so we know how small that is. And you basically have a 10-band EQ, options for the RGB lighting on the card, and very little else, you know, updates and some basic settings that you can tweak for the default filters. But yeah, if you're an audiophile, this is something you want to check out. But $250 MSRP. If you're an EVGA Elite member, you can get it for $199, so $50 off. That's still a high cost of entry if you're strictly a gamer that wants a good sound card. But if you're an audiophile, you know, some of these guys spend $200 on cables. If you're an audiophile and you care about, you know, that top-notch unmolested audio signals, it's probably something you're going to want to look into.
Unmolested, hot sex. What are you talking about, Marco?
You've got my brain in that channel now, man. I can't shut it off.
Don't blame me, dude. Don't blame me.
It's you. It's all you. It's that face. That face.
Don't blame me for going in the gutter. Yeah. So you know, and that's the thing. I tend to be an audiophile, an audio snob. I get really stuck on, you know, for example, headphones and buds and whatnot. And my ear has a pretty sensitive, I think, range to what I like, and can discern. But yeah, it's a lot to justify. I work with integrated onboard audio. We heard this thing in the suite, and it was hooked up to a Class AB amplifier, and it was freaking amazing. But then again, Class AB amplifiers are amazing. And so it was, but the thing of it was, they were showing, here's the purity of the signal that's coming from this digital source that was absolutely crispy, beautiful. I think it's niche, and but I think, you know, that niche will be passionate about it. So probably a good idea for EVGA, serving the passionate niche. It builds brand loyalty, and it certainly can be profitable. I think this is probably a profitable product for them. Paul, or are they, what do you think? Are they onto something? And then we got to move on.
Yeah, I'm a little bit biased. I've been using sound cards, you know, since the early 90s. Remember the old Sound Blaster 16? And Marco, you probably remember that that Dr. Sabatio program where you could play, it's like this little AI psychologist where you could ask it questions and it would give you goofy answers. But yeah, I've been using sound cards since then. And if you, you know, if you have a real cheap set of headphones or speakers, it's not going to make a big difference. But if you've invested in, you know, some even halfway decent speakers or headphones, I say, you know, get a sound card. It's worth it. So, and yeah, I'm stoked that EVGA is in here now. It used to be, you know, Adlib and Sound Blaster. These days, it's mostly Creative with their Sound Blaster line. I know ASUS has their Zonar cards, and I think there's a few other companies that dabble that are less known. But I like that EVGA has gone in this direction. I hope they stick with it.
Cool. And Craig asked, what outputs does it have? 1/8 inch RCA optical? ? Marco, can you grab that quick? And then we got to move.
Yeah. Gold-plated RCA stereo outs, a 6.3 millimeter headphone output, a 3.5 millimeter line input, a 3.5 millimeter microphone input, and SPDIF output. But it comes with adapters to use that headphone out with 3.5 millimeter or to use the component outputs as 3.5 millimeter.
So they set this thing up with all the options. Nice.
Yes.
Okay, cool. Well, let's move on and pull the pin and toss the grenade, shall we? crazy or plausible? Paul wrote this one. Crazy or plausible? Intel rumored to consider AMD acquisition. Now, we won't spend too much time on this. And we were very careful about vetting this story and sort of, you know, it's out there. No question about it. But was our source credible? Was, you know, the notion, did it hold water in any shape or form? And at the end of the day, we came back with enough to run it. And we did. And EE Times actually was the source of this. Paul, you wrote it up. But at CES, EE Times got a little bit of scuttlebutt. And I started thinking it through. And the first thing that comes to mind is anti-competitive, antitrust, FTC all over it, going to throw flags and freaking, you know, I'm going to say it, just piss on that parade. and then if I think about it, though, if I really sort of get a little bit deeper in strategy and sort of legalese, there's a case you could hang your hat on that says, well, what we've got, you know, we've got ARM on Windows with Qualcomm, who is a major silicon supplier, and Microsoft has initiated a program to support. We've got Apple, who has been actively designing or working to design more of their own silicon, and rumors have been surfacing that there would be a Mac powered by an Apple chip, which probably at some point, you know, could take shape, but in all likelihood would not be an x86 design. It would be probably ARM-based. So there's lots of sort of plausibility here, and that's why we sort of threw that out there. Paul, what are your thoughts about this whole thing, and is it all, you know, crazy town or what?
Is it clickbait? Is that what you're asking me, Dave?
I love it when people, you know, I love when people call it clickbait because that means we wrote the right headline. Not like clickbait headline, but we wrote something interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what this is to me. I mean, we do cover rumors and speculation from time to time, and we label that in the headline. So I don't think anyone is baited into clicking. And we even put the word crazy in the headline. It could be a crazy rumor. So, you know, if you were still baited, we apologize. But, you know, it is a fun topic to talk about. I don't think it'll happen for the same reason that everybody else does, is that they would have one hell of a time trying to clear all the regulatory hurdles. But it is something that EE Times said they heard at CES from people at Intel that they were thinking about. So I don't know if maybe there's something there or they would try something. I doubt it. The other thing, though, is they talked about, they heard, I don't remember if they heard rumors or if someone speculated that they might, instead of buying AMD out, would try to poach, you know, Dr. Lisa Su from AMD. That to me is unlikely as well, but maybe a little more plausible, because remember, they took their graphics guy, Raja Koduri, in pretty quick fashion after they launched Vega. So, you know, anything is possible. It's not likely, but I think it's, these are fun topics to discuss, and, you know, kind of a what if scenario if it would happen.
Yeah, I think it's, and a lot of folks were like, oh, hell no, you know, because you're talking limiting consumer choice, and that's understandable. And, you know, there's obviously some serious ramifications with it, but I don't think it's out of the realm of plausibility. I guess that's really what, you know, certainly it doesn't pass the sniff test, but.
Yeah. Especially now that AMD is competing again at the high end, I don't think any of us really want something like this to happen. So,
right. No, competition is good for the consumer. Everybody's been psyched on AMD's comeback. Dr. Lisa Su has been applauded for that, for coordinating that effort. Marco, any thoughts before we move on and close this thing out for the day?
I agree 100% with Paul. It's all speculation. If you ask me, somebody probably just threw that rumor out there to manipulate the stock price short term.
Manipulate the stock price, you think?
Didn't the stock go up a few percentage points as soon as the rumor hit?
It did. But I think that, you know, honestly, I think it was up like 1%. And I think the NASDAQ and tech in general had a little bit of a blip that day. I think it was coincidental, but I don't know. All right. Well, let's close that one out. We'll see what happens. You never know. I will say this: when it comes to the semiconductor and technology sector in general, learn to never be surprised about anything and you'll be better off, because it's just, I mean, you know, tech, man, it'll jump up and surprise you at any given time. So let's close out on this last little bit and talk about Facebook's creepy AI feeding 10-year challenge. Did you take the 10-year challenge for one thing? And were you duped into a scheme that Facebook was trying to harvest images from people, comparing their likeness from 10 years ago to today? And if you think about it, it is helping to train the AI with respect to aging and currency of photos for its users. And I don't know, is it all a bunch of tinfoil hat, or could have been something? Was there smoke and fire, Paul? Because you wrote this one up too.
Yeah. Who really knows? I my gut tells me it was a meme that went viral and that was it. But it also wouldn't surprise me to learn that, you know, Facebook could have started it with something else in mind, with specifically to train their AI for to detect aging. It's the same company that had the Cambridge Analytica scandal. It's the same company that a few years ago conducted that psychology experiment where they'd mess with your feed to see if they could affect your emotions. And so it's always something we find out down the road. So I don't think we'll get an answer now, but maybe a year or two down, we'll find out. That Facebook was up to something here, or it was just a meme that went viral. One of the two.
Yeah. You know, and I think that's kind of the moral of the story, though, is that when you think about what you are putting into these engines that these large corporations build, remember what you're offering up, what you're sacrificing, what you're giving up. And that is your privacy. And if you're not okay with this company having, you know, your image to put into a machine to do facial recognition on you and age marking and identification to show really the progress of time on people, you know, what we learned from Cambridge Analytica, you know, and that whole scandal was that obviously Facebook, you know, at least at one point was not only somewhat careless with their user data, but they were also willing to sell it callously as well. And that really, you know, makes me uncomfortable and gives me a skeptical eye with respect to using the Facebook platform. I still use it, but I put out on it only what I want the entire world and Facebook to see, because, you know, I just understand that's the rules of engagement. Marco, how do you feel about this thing? And then we'll close out for the day, because we could go on forever on this one, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think it was just a meme that went viral. I actually made a joke out of it on my feed. And, you know, do I think it was specifically put out there to mine data? No. Do I think the data will be mined? Heck yes. So
Yeah. I personally think it was put out there to mine data. I just don't know what the intent was. And so I don't want to jump to conclusions that it was to train their AI or do something nefarious or otherwise, or not nefarious. You know, but when you have a mechanism to drive engagement that has users submitting pictures and other personally identifiable information, I know too much about the way the back end works. You know, and it just smacks to me of at least a little bit of manipulation. I don't know how much, and I don't know if it's nefarious, but I'm skeptical. So it's not tinfoil hat. It's, I guess, cautious skepticism, maybe. I don't know. Whatever. Paul thinks I'm tinfoil hat. He called me that this morning.
No, it's not tinfoil hat. It's aluminum beanie, but it's not tinfoil hat.
Aluminum beanie. Awesome. Cool. With a propeller. If I get a propeller, I'm good. All right. Well, hey, let's call it a day. And thanks to the folks for stopping by here. hit thumbs up and subscribe if you would. Join us if you can every Wednesday. We try and be here every Wednesday at 5:30. The three of us in some shape or form, 2.5 geeks. I'm the half geek usually. These guys go full geek on me. But yeah, you can find us on the web at hothardware.com, twitter.com/hothardware, facebook.com/hothardware, or here on YouTube, where again, thumbs up, subscribe. We put out the webcast. We put out tech product reviews. We put out event coverage like CES, all kinds of good stuff. Guys, what do you want to say to these folks?
I'll just offer up a quick goodbye. Craig wants to see the back of my jacket here. There's no chance I'm turning around and showing you guys the bald spot on video. So it just says Ryzen on the back, brother.
And with that, we will say have a good evening and thanks for stopping by.